Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
Okay, as I said earlier, the topic of our talk is how to cultivate compassion for ourselves and others. But before I start talking about the compassion, I would like to say maybe a few words about the present crisis in which we are all in, and which now is with us for almost a year. And I think that this crisis somehow created an atmosphere for all kind of negative emotions to arise in people. It's a very difficult time, and I'm sure you all agree with me. You know, there is this constant threat of becoming infected. There is a lot of people dying, unfortunately. People whom we know and people who are dying prematurely because of the coronavirus, not because of some other diseases. And it's not just the old and the ill people, but it is also the younger people and healthy people as well. So this is a very difficult conditions to live in, and still the only protection we have is mainly it's isolation. It is wearing a mask and avoiding the groups of people, and so our social life changed greatly, you know. And as a social beings, our stability, our psychological stability, and our ways of maintaining that stability in life was very much connected with our social activities, with being with others, you know, and doing what in these conditions we are not able to do. So we are pretty much alone in this. And people have families, they live with their families, but that also is a very, very close way of living, you know, and something which is not normal, so to say, not usual. And it's not just a health crisis, it's an economic crisis as well. You know, a lot of people lost their jobs, and there is an insecurity which comes out of that. And also our human rights are somehow, taken away from us. So we are not free to do whatever we want as before, you know. So anyway, this is a very, very unusual conditions to live in, and for that reason, very difficult conditions to live in. So living in these conditions brings in us, all kinds of as I said earlier, negative emotions and problems, problems in coping with the life. And, you know, whatever tendencies before we had, now these tendencies are, you know, ready to explode somehow, you know, and come open and affect us and other people around us as well, you know. So there is some possibilities of getting out of these conditions. You know, the scientists came up with the vaccine, and that is a great news. That is a great thing, and we have a variety of those vaccines ready to use. But still, there is no enough vaccine for everybody, and there is a problem with the production of those vaccines, and there is also problems in various countries in the way this vaccine is distributed. So although the vaccine is a good news, there is a lot of problem with it also. And on another hand, the virus itself is not standing still. There is all kind of mutations going on, and it seems that some of those mutations are much more infectious than the ones we know from the beginning, which is also a great danger. And in altogether, it seems to me that it will take time. It will take more time probably than we think until we will be able to get out of this crisis. And however, this situation might be difficult for all those reasons I just mentioned, and from all other reasons which I did not mention. It is for us as a practitioner, it is opportunity for practice. You know, as Chinese ideogram for crisis is danger and opportunity, I think we have to turn this danger into opportunity, and we have to use this time for a practice. Even we have to intensify our practice in these conditions, and not just for ourselves, of course, but for others as well. From that perspective, if we look at this crisis from that perspective, it seems that it is not all bad. You know, there is some good things about it, and we can find actually a lot of good things about this crisis. For example, I was amazed to hear that seismologists discovered that the vibration of the planet Earth slows down. You know, this vibration is not so high as it was before the crisis. You know, and it is amazing that our human activity actually makes the whole Earth to tremble in a certain, you know, vibration, which was much, much higher before than it is now. And I think that the Earth itself is the nature itself is somehow recovering from us, you know, doing whatever we are doing on this planet. And we know that our human activities is not all beneficial, you know. And even this crisis, I think, with this virus coming from the animals into the human world is also, in my opinion, part of our relationship with the nature, you know, how we are related with the nature, how we are related with the animals. I think this somehow is a result of that, that kind of relationship and the way we treat animals and the way we treat nature in general. So, you know, knowing all this, I was hoping somehow that this crisis will give us opportunity, you know, to rethink and remodel maybe the way we live, the way we treat each other, the way we treat nature, and so on. Because whenever activity subsides, whenever we as a humanity stops as we did now, there is opportunity to reflect on our activity. It is opportunity to reflect on our actions and the consequences of those actions. And there is a great opportunity for change. But I don't know. I'm not very optimistic in that respect. People are just waiting for things to start as usual, you know, as they were before. And they are very anxious, waiting for normal living to start again. It is questionable whether we will ever return to the normal living as we were live before. It remains to be seen how situation will be developing. But this talk is about the compassion, so I won't bother you very much with all those things you already know. So compassion is a huge topic in Buddhism, especially in Mahayana Buddhism. It's a huge topic. It's difficult to present it in a very simple way. You know, so I would like to say maybe a few words as an introduction. I would like to say that the general opinion, which is somehow prevailing today about human nature, is not very nice. You know, we think of ourselves being competitive, we think of ourselves being very often ruthless, we think of ourselves to be very selfish, and when we learn about the history of human race, we also learn about, well, we predominantly learn about the human conflicts and the wars and disasters and all kind of you know, difficulties which were a result of our human nature or the way we are with each other and with the nature in general. And even today when we are reading or listening what the media are presenting to us, we are mainly confronted with the bad news, you know, the catastrophes and the wars and the conflicts all over the planet, which are happening continuously. So all this together somehow creates impression that our human nature is everything but not compassionate. You know, it seems that in order to give rise to compassion, we have to do a miracle. You know, we have to do enormous amount, we have to put enormous amount of effort in order to turn our nature from what it seems to be into what we would like it like it to be, you know, like compassionate. And and for example, if we remind ourselves on Charles Darwin, you know, who gave us the theory of evolution, and some people described his work as or the principle of his work as a survival of the toughest, you know. We could also have this impression that that our survival is based on aggression, on the our ability to defeat our enemies, and so on. Now, what people usually forget is that, or simply they don't know, and I recently found out that Charles Darwin, in his last book, was writing about sympathy. You know, he was, at that time, there was no still the word empathy present at all. So he used the word sympathy in order to describe the human and animals in their how to say in the way they related to each other with what we would call today compassion. You know, this he was actually saying that humans and animals have this empathic nature, and they all are looking to help each other whenever you know somebody is finding distress. There is this urge in human people, but he also noticed that this urge is present among the animals as well. And in his book, he even mentioned the story of the person who works in a zoo. He's a zookeeper. Can I use that word in English? Zookeeper, someone who works in a zoo and watches over animals. And that zookeeper was actually showing him the wounds on his neck, which were a result of baboon attacking him, you know. But what the story he was telling is about the small monkey who was also there, and who was in a very friendly relationship with the zookeeper, and who at that moment jumped on the baboon, screaming and fighting, trying to protect him from baboon, although he was otherwise very much afraid of that baboon, and he was, you know, always looking for you know, moving out of his way. But at that time, when he saw that his human friend is endangered from baboon, he actually was risking his own life in order to help the zookeeper. And for Charles Darwin, that was a story which proves actually that animals also have this empathic nature. Nowadays, there is a lot of research on empathy and the compassion going on, and biologists and also other scientists from other areas are discovering actually that we have this empathic nature really, you know, present in ourselves from a very early age, from very early on, you know. So they discovered that it's not a great discovery. I think we all know that, you know, that the children when they are still babies, so very, very young, when they hear the other children cry, that they start crying as well. And also, they notice that what could be called empathic response develops in children when they are around 2, 2.5 years old, and it is connected with their ability to differentiate between the self and the other. You know, once they become aware of others, and once they become aware that they can actually experience what others are experiencing, you know, they show also empathic tendencies. You know, for example, when one child hears the other child, you know, is in kind of distress, he will come and give a toy to that child or try to hug him or somehow to comfort him. You know, so this behavior also shows that our nature is empathic nature, really, as a difference from the opinions I was mentioning earlier. So whether this empathy will develop in a child depends very much on the behavior of parents. It depends very much on the values, you know, they cherished. And it depends very much on world view and the culture in general in which the child is growing. So from all this we can see that even the modern science is trying to rethink somehow those views about the human nature and to research into it and finding out whether those views were right or wrong. And many are actually saying that the level of empathy in certain society is much, much more important in relation to stability of that society and improvement of that society than those other you know, qualities or if I can call them so, you know, the competitiveness and aggression and all those factors I mentioned earlier. So empathy is seen as essential quality in our human development from this perspective. And all these are bringing us to the Buddhist point of view. And in Buddhism, there is a saying, actually it's a very nice saying, I like it very much. It is about a comparison of moon and the water and the compassion. And it is said that as the moon is reflected in even the smallest surface of the water on Earth, so also is compassion present even in the most cruel of people, even in a trace, if it is just the traces of compassion, but it is present, it is there, you know. And we all know from Buddhist teaching that Buddhism speaks about the Buddha nature, and this Buddha nature is nothing else but the wisdom and compassion. So in Buddhism, or from the Buddhist perspective, compassion is our very nature, you know. So however deeply buried, however hidden from us, veiled by our ignorance and vexations and all kind of things, it is still there. It is still there, and we can see it. We can see it. You know, we can see its radiance and its presence in every single act of kindness, every single act of helping people, helping others, and you know, doing good things and so on. So whenever such things are happening, we can be sure that actually this compassion radiating, you know, through these coverings and everything else. So when we, I said earlier that in especially in Mahayana Buddhism, the compassion is very, very important. And why is that? It is because, you know, the Mahayana means a great vehicle. It's a great vehicle of leading all sentient beings to liberation. So as a difference from maybe other attitudes, which some people have, attitude of liberating themselves. You know, the Mahayana is always emphasizing liberation for all. And the main force of, if I can say so, of liberating all sentient beings is precisely compassion. You know, without the compassion, that is simply not possible. So in Mahayana Buddhism, the ideal of a practitioner is a bodhisattva. It is someone who actually postpone his own liberation in order to help all sentient beings to become liberated. And how bodhisattva can achieve that? By rising what is called bodhicitta, by rising the body mind. And when we look at this body mind, we find out that the body mind is precisely this great compassion. Great compassion and also renunciation. These are two qualities which are very important in developing the body mind. So, as a Chan practitioners, and I suppose most of us here tonight are Chan practitioners, we are on the Mahayana path, and we are on the path of Bodhisattva. And as being on the path of Bodhisattva, we are all trying to give rise to this body mind. And the way to give rise to this body mind is precisely by renunciation and development of compassion. So these are the two main aspects of a bodhicitta. And before I continue with this, I would like maybe to define the word compassion so that it becomes clear what we are talking about really. Because it's not always clear what compassion means really, you know. So the Sanskrit word for compassion is karuna. And the meaning of karuna is wish to alleviate the suffering of others. You know, it is a great wish which arises in ourselves to alleviate suffering of others. You know, this is how we define compassion, which means that we have to know the feelings of others. We have to know what others people feel. We have to know what is it that other people suffer from. What are their sufferings? And how they are coping with these feelings and sufferings. What is their condition in general? So this knowing the feeling of others, knowing the suffering of others, being open to know the suffering of others, this is how we define compassion. This is what compassion really is. But when we say that, you know, we have to also understand that compassion is not simply Feeling what others people feel. It does not mean simply suffering with other people who suffer. No, it does not mean that we drown ourselves together with others in their suffering. You know, it would be very, very wrong, you know, to understand compassion in that way. So compassion is a wish to alleviate the suffering of others. And if we really want to do that, if we really want to be able to alleviate the suffering of others, we have to know what the suffering is. We have to be able to alleviate our own suffering to certain extent. You know, we have to be familiar with suffering, the causes of suffering, and how is suffering coming about, you know, and what is it that we can do to alleviate it. So in that sense, we see that compassion is not a very simple attitude towards the suffering of others. It is based on our own experience, our own insight in suffering which is happening in ourselves. You know, the more we are familiar with our own sufferings and its causes and the ways of alleviating it, the more we will be able to really be compassionate with other people, and we'll be in a much better position to really help them, because compassion is about helping others, you know, helping others deal with their own sufferings. So there would be no point in drowning ourselves in other people's compassion, you know, simply by joining them in their own suffering. You know, it would be no point in that. And this is sometimes happen with the sympathy, when we have a sympathy for others, and when we are very sensitive to others. But if that sensitivity is not followed by real understanding of suffering and its causes in our own self, then this sympathy is not something which can help the other person, nor is something which can help ourselves. You know, so we have to differentiate between sympathy on the one hand and the compassion on the other hand. We have to know what is the real meaning of compassion. And now maybe it is easier to understand renunciation and compassion as a two aspect of bodhicitta, as I described them earlier, because renunciation can leave impression, maybe wrong impression to people, that we have to give up everything, that we have to give up our social life, that we have to give up all these things our life normally and usually consists of, and that we have to go into some cave somewhere, you know, and to get rid of everything and practice on our own in such conditions. But that's not the right understanding of renunciation. Renunciation is, what it really means is that we let go of suffering and its causes. Letting go of suffering and its causes. If you think of renunciation in that way, it is much easier actually to bring up that determination to do so. And the renunciation is very much connected with that kind of determination. A determination that we simply won't continue suffering, and that we want to let go of its causes, and that we want to transform ourselves from the person who suffers into the person who is who is free from suffering and happy and relaxed. You know, so renunciation has that meaning, and now we can see in what way it is connected to compassion. We could even say that renunciation is a compassion itself. It is a compassion to ourselves. You know, because whenever we contemplate our mind and body, whenever we are in practice, whenever we are deepening our understanding of ourselves, and whenever we are deepening the ways in which suffering is arising in ourselves, whenever we understand this process, become more familiar and closer to it, you know, we are actually having compassion to ourselves. You know, even the, you know, the method of relaxation, when we are using the method of relaxation, you know, it is a kind of expression of compassion, you know, compassion to ourselves, because we are letting go of all these tensions in our bodies, and then we realize that these tensions in the bodies are coming originally from our mind, and then we continue to relax our mind. So, you know, this process of relaxation of body and mind is actually the act of compassion, compassion towards ourselves. And once we have that experience, it's not so difficult to extend that same compassion to others. You know, but when we are talking about others, we have to know that we become aware of the others once we stop being obsessed with ourselves. You know, so the way to become aware of the others is stopping of being obsessed with ourselves. You know, it's like a precondition. As long as we think of ourselves, as long as we are continuously obsessed with things which are happening to ourselves, as long as we are the center of this world, and as long as we everything perceive in relation to our own self, you know, and our selfish interests and our various self perspectives, you know, we don't really see others. We are not really aware of others. And we are, in that sense, far, far away from really knowing what is going on with others, what is happening inside of them. You know, because although we relate to people daily, you know, maybe now in this crisis less than before the crisis, but nevertheless, we are in contact with people around us. But to what extent we really know what is happening with them? You know, are we stopping on this surface? Are we simply accepting the other people as they want to present themselves to us? Or are we going deeper than that? Are we thinking of what is behind? What is going on with these people? Okay, they behave maybe kindly and so on and so on. But what is really behind? What is bothering them? To what extent they suffer, and what is their inner problems, you know? So having compassion means becoming aware of others, but not in a superficial way. Becoming aware of others, it means becoming aware of others in much deeper way, you know, seeing what lies behind the way people behave, and behind what people are saying, or behind, you know, what people are thinking. So seeing behind, this is a compassion. When we can really feel how others feel, you know, when we can actually put ourselves in their shoes, as the saying is telling us. You know, then we can to a certain extent know what's going on with these people, and that is a position from which we can really help. You know, if we are not aware of what's going on behind, how we can help? You know, if we can address, you know, the certain behavior people have, we can address what they are saying and so on, but without really having insight into these deeper layers of beings, of others, you know, it's very difficult to apply right medicine. It's very difficult to help them. It's very difficult actually to address their fears and address their, whatever it is, hopes suffering of various kinds which can exist in us. You know, so this is a relationship between renunciation on one hand and compassion on the other. You know, it's like I don't know the English word for it. you know, there are proportional. This relationship is a proportional in one sense, but it's also opposite. How to say the less we think about ourselves, the more we will be aware of the others and their sufferings. You know, so. The less we are ego, the less there is egocentricity in ourselves, the more awareness is there. The more awareness is there, the more intimate we become with others. And the closer we know the feeling of others and the suffering of others. And our ability to help is also in direct proportion with that. You know, the less egocentricity is in ourselves, the better understanding of suffering we have. And the, in a better position we are to help others in their suffering. You know, I hope you see this connection. I think it's very important to understand that when we talk about compassion. And I think that, traditionally and from the perspective of the Dharma, we can say that, you know, there is a three stages of or three levels of compassionate activity, or the quality of the compassion. You know, it can be like an ordinary compassion towards the sentient beings in a way that we find, you know, around us, this kind of compassion, you know, people who are helping the closest, people who are closest to them, who are helping their neighbors, and who are willing to help in a certain way, certain people, and so on. So this is one level of compassion which we can see in our everyday life, and of course, which is beneficial and which is good. You know, this is something which whenever we see, we have to support. You know, but then there is another level of compassion which comes from the understanding of the Dharma. And that kind of compassion is not based on discrimination in between people. We are not really discriminating. We are helping whoever we can, whenever we can. You know, we are doing our best to help whenever we see someone in need for help. So we don't discriminate that person or that group. from the perspective of whether we know them or don't know them, whether they are our neighbors or not our neighbors, and so on and so on. We simply see the suffering and we are there to help in alleviating that suffering, you know. So this is like a another level which is based on the understanding which Dharma is giving us, understanding that all sentient beings have a Buddha nature and that they all deserve to be helped. If we can see people in that way, we won't discriminate between them. We will be ready to help, and we will do everything in which is in our power to help them whenever we can. So this is like another level, which is very deep level actually, it is a level in which our compassion is based on understanding of the Dharma, and the level in which we are devoted, doing it as something which is part of us, which is very natural to us to do. You know, there is no forcing ourselves to be compassionate and to help other people in various ways. It is very much present in ourselves. This wish for alleviating suffering of others is very much alive and present in our lives. And this is the basis of our acting, you know. And the third level is usually described as unconditioned compassion, which is unconditioned, which doesn't have any conditions. It is simply level of compassion on which there is a deep understanding of the needs, and also the deep understanding of what is the appropriate medicine for certain needs, you know. And also the helping is completely spontaneous. There is no even idea of the helper, by what we are helping, and also no idea of whom we are helping. It is complete understanding of the true nature of beings whom we are helping, and of ourselves, of course. So it is said that this level belongs to the Buddhas and to the great Bodhisattvas. But nevertheless, this is something which we have to orient ourselves towards. You know, we have to direct our energy towards that goal, to become a compassionate in this unconditional way. And from all of this, another thing is it seems to me clear, and it is that, you know, in order to really expressing our compassion, be compassionate and expressing our compassion, we have to overcome our own shortcomings. We have to overcome our limitations in order to really be of help to others. You know, so it's not enough to know the feeling of others. We have to be able to help them in a very appropriate way. This is what I meant earlier when I said that on that level, the illness is known thoroughly, and appropriate medicine for that illness is known thoroughly also. You know, so If we want our help to be adequate, if we want our help to be appropriate and timely, you know, we have to develop ourselves. We have to overcome our own limitations and master limitless approaches to Dharma, as one of the Bodhisattva vows is suggesting. You know, so this is what we will have to do. So it's quite complex, you know, when we think on a compassion from this perspective, it becomes quite complex because we can see that it is connected with our motivation, and there is the various levels of motivation present in ourselves, you know? And it is also connected with what is called the dana paramita in Mahayana Buddhism. You know, so the dana paramita is actually the way in which compassion is manifested. You know, it is manifested through dana paramita. You know, maybe we don't always think in that way, but it is so, because dana paramita is actually paramita which is telling us in what way we can help other people. You know, what are the ways in which we can help other people? You know, so if we have this compassion in ourselves, the dana paramita is an actual practical approach to express this wish, you know, and to engage ourselves on a very practical level in helping other people in various ways. You know? So when we are talking about dana paramita, the first thing is how we differentiate is the giving. Dana paramita is giving. So giving with characteristics or giving without characteristics, or maybe simpler way to describe that is giving with the idea of result, you know, giving with the idea of gaining something out of that giving, all right? And the other is giving without any idea of getting something in return. All right, so these are two main approaches in giving. So if somebody is give something to others, helping others in various ways, but at the back of the mind has an idea that he will get some benefit out of this giving, then this is a giving characteristic. This is a giving with the idea of result, which will follow, you know. And even that giving is fine. That giving is also good, because whenever we give, whenever we help other people, you know, in various ways, this is a positive, this is a beneficial, you know. There is a better way of giving, you know, and that better way of giving is you know, the giving which is free from this idea of what we will gain in return, you know, which is completely free from that. And when dana paramita is explained, there is usually explanation of what is given, why it is given, and how it is given. You know, these are like the three main aspects of the dana paramita: what is given, how it is given, why it is given. So what is given? All kind of material things, you know, whatever it is. It can be food, it can be, you know, giving the liquids to the thirsty, or food to hungry people, or clothes, or giving time to other people, you know, being with them when they need us, you know, giving our time to them, that's also giving. And giving our knowledge to them as well, you know, our understanding, helping them solving various issues in their life, you know. This is all kind of material giving. And then there is a second thing which is very important, that's giving of Dharma. You know, when we are actually sharing our experience of Dharma with others. When we are talking about the compassion, and when we talk about the compassion as a wish to alleviate suffering of others, sharing Dharma with others is actually a way of helping them alleviate their suffering, you know. When we share our understanding, when we share with them various ways in which they can release their suffering and deepen their understanding and so on. This is the way to give a Dharma, you know, and this is to help people by sharing our Dharma understanding with them. And there is a third object of giving in Dana Paramita, and that is fearlessness. You could say it's Dharma also, but it's a very, how to say, it's a very direct way of saying what is it that troubles people the most. You know, the fear is something, I think, which is the very, very troublesome emotion in people's life. And taking away the fears of others is maybe the higher gift which we can give to other people, and a higher way of expressing our compassion to them as well. So, again, we see here this unconditional giving is connected with unconditional compassion. You know, it is the same level we mentioned earlier. You know, so when we usually share our Dharma knowledge and experience with others, trying to help them, this is like a second level of compassion. You know, and simply helping people by giving them whatever they need. Is like a first level. So there is these levels could be connected with the levels of motivation in our practice. You know, we can be motivated for a practice in order to help ourselves in this life, simply living happier, more relaxed, more joyful life than what could be possible without practice. So we can see practice on that level. You know, we can see practice as a way of getting rid of stress, you know, getting rid of various phobias which we might have, or very simply being relaxed, open, joyful, and so on. So this is a one kind of understanding of why we are practicing, you know, and why we use the method and concept of practice. Another level of understanding is, or motivation, is actually when we have in mind not just this life, but the future lives as well. You know, when we have these much wider look on life and what's going on in life, you know, and when we practice with the idea of gaining a better future revert, that's also possible. I don't know whether this is so present in the West, but traditionally it is a part of Buddhism, and And samsara is understood as going from one life to another. And if we don't think we can be liberated in this life, we can maybe practice in order to create a better condition in the next life liberate ourselves, or to experience liberation. So this is one. This is another possible motivation, you know. But the third and the highest motivation is, when we want liberation for everyone, when we want liberation for all sentient beings, and this is what we call bodhicitta. And bodhicitta, as I said earlier, is a combination of renunciation on one hand, letting go of suffering and its causes, you know, being very determined to let go of them on one hand, and the compassion and the wish to help others on the other side. What I was explaining to you now is, I think, a structure. You know, it is a structure. It is a traditional way of understanding compassion and its place in a context of our practice. You know, but how we can actually cultivate compassion. It is understandable that through practice we are letting go of our egocentricity. We become less and less self-centered, and in that process, of course, we become more open, more sensitive, and more able to help others, more aware of others, and able to help others. So this is all there somehow. But there are some practices which can we do in order to nurture compassion, in order to develop compassion, in order to initiate that process of fully discovering compassion in ourselves. And several ways of in which we can approach cultivation of compassion. For example, in Theravada Buddhism, you know, they have these four positive emotions which they call the Brahma Viharas. Loving kindness, it is compassion, it is joy, and it is equanimity, you know, and it's called the Brahma Viharas, which means abode of the gods, you know. So whenever we experience those emotions, positive emotions, it is like being gods, you know. When we are filled with the loving kindness and friendliness, or when we are filled with the compassion, or when we are filled with joy, or when we have this equanimity, you know, this mental stability developed to a certain extent, we feel like gods. You know, this is not a normal everyday human feelings, you know, emotions. This is a much deeper state. Which brings a very open mind and a very, very relaxed attitude, you know, in life. You know, I think it's important to understand that these positive emotions are also very much connected to what we are calling the hindrances in our meditation practice, you know, hindrances in our meditation practice. Nivaranas in Sanskrit, you know. There is these hindrances which are actually keeping our mind scattered and these hindrances are creating conditions for negative emotions to arise in our minds and so on. So this is what keeps us in this, our normal, usual, everyday life situations, you know. When we overcome these hindrances through the meditation practice, they become transformed into positive emotions. Now, when we break through these hindrances, so to say, or when we transform them, you know, they are transformed into their opposites, and their opposites are precisely these positive emotions of loving kindness and friendliness and compassion, you know, and joy and equanimity, like stability of mind. And these are all very positive mental states of openness, and actually we are really feeling like gods when we can give rise to this positive emotion in our experience. So that's why in Theravada Buddhism they call them Brahma Viharas. In the Mahayana Buddhism they are called immeasurable states of mind. Why they are called immeasurable states of mind? Precisely because openness of the mind, because we extend them to all sentient beings. This positive emotion we extend to all sentient beings in all directions. So for this reason, they're called immeasurables. You know, and there is a methods of practice by which these positive emotions are cultivated. So for example, and most people are familiar with the Maitri, with the loving kindness or friendliness, which is actually wish for others to be happy, you know, which is developed in a way that we first start from ourselves. So we direct this wish to be happy to ourselves, repeating certain formula and having in mind our life, our rising and falling in our life and everything which is happening in our life. We develop this kind of friendliness and kindness towards ourselves. And then we extend that to the people who are very close to us, and then to neutral people, and then to people for whom we feel some kind of antipathy or unfriendliness. You know, I won't say enemies, but this is also a category of people which we include into this, and then in the end we extend that. A loving kindness to all beings, to all directions. Okay, and this is a very efficient practice. And compassion is practice or cultivated in the more or less the same way. You know, we can start with the person who is close to us, for whom we know that person is in distress, and we can direct our compassion, our wish to alleviate the suffering of that person to that person. You know, we can have that person in mind. We can imagine that person and the problems that person has. We can direct this wish of alleviating that suffering towards that person. And then we move to the people who help us, you know, in similar way. And we direct our compassion to those people. And then we can direct compassion to neutral person to whom we have no any kind of relations. And then we can move to people who are causing suffering to others, you know, people who are causing actually suffering to others. We also include those people in our compassion, which is actually very, very important aspect of cultivating compassion, because it is not just compassion is not just directed towards the victims. You know, compassion is also directed towards the people who inflict suffering on others as well, because they are also victim. They are also victim of their own ignorance and non-understanding. You know, and I think that is a very, very important point when we are talking about compassion. Compassion has to be without discrimination, you know, directed towards everyone, all sentient beings. So I think we are, how we are with the time? I don't hear you, Changu Fachi. Could you?
Yeah. I think we're good. Do you want to end your talk here and open floor for questions?
Yeah, I would like just to say maybe a few sentences more, because maybe this presentation was more about the traditional structure and the place of compassion in our practice. But when we are talking about compassion, we are talking about the people who we meet every single day. You know, whether we are open to these people, whether we really feel what's going on with these people, what is it that we do in order to help these people? You know, how carefully we are listening to them, you know, how closely we know them, you know, how intimate we are with them in the sense of knowing what's really going on with them. I think this is where our compassion has to be directed. And this is how we change our immediate surrounding, you know, and creating also the web of a good relationship among the people, which supports them and support us, support everyone. You know, in extending this compassion, we really overcome this difference between the self and the others in the process as well. That's also very important to mention. You know? So I don't think we have much time, so I will end my talk here. And maybe if you have any questions, I would be very glad to answer to the extent of my ability.